This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Wednesday, August 8th. Good afternoon. I'm Regine Schlesinger.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We could see a shower or thunderstorm in places around the area, but right now it's partly cloudy, a high of 84 today, 78 now at O'Hare.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. The market's generally lower today. Let's get a look at it with Elisa Parenti at Bloomberg.
That's right, Regine. With the Dow now down 52 points or 0.2%, we're at 25,576. NASDAQ up 4 and the S&P lower by 1. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index down 0.3%. The median home value across the country climbed to a record $276,900 in June. Fed rate hikes are threatening to bring prices lower, but we're also hearing about 30-year mortgages at better than 4.5%. That's close to a 7-year high. Crude oil futures are sinking almost 4%, all the way down to $66.50. That is weighing on the energy sector, and Walt Disney shares not helping. They're down almost 2%. The blue chip posted disappointing results. Also want to update you on Tesla stock after shooting 11% higher yesterday on news that it may go private. Tesla stock today is down about 2%. Back to you, Regine and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, the economy expands, but there are still many unfilled jobs and a slowing of wage growth. And as you mentioned, the Wall Street's trying to figure out Tesla today, and we will too.
And some more bad news for Facebook. It's about to be surpassed by YouTube as the second largest website. We'll talk about that. Personal Finance Wednesday. Are you racking up a lot of bank fees? Things like overdraft charges. We'll tell you how to avoid that. And CVS is beginning a telemedicine feature that where you can be diagnosed over the internet.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Tesla CEO Elon Musk's tweet that he's considering taking the company private has been driving shares of the economy through the roof. That happened yesterday, and today a little more settled with it. Let's get an update in our next segment. Right now, China is announcing 25% tariffs on $16 billion worth of U.S. goods, while a tightening job market is making it tougher for small businesses to find good help. We're joined by Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Welcome back to the program. Gus, where does this go with China now? The U.S. and China matching each other at every step?
That's right. So we saw the U.S. impose additional tariffs on Chinese-made goods earlier this week. We're seeing China respond in kind. We'll see what the next step from the United States is. So far, the tariffs, although they've hit particular industries, won't have a great impact on either the U.S. economy or the Chinese economy. But the concern is that as both sides ratchet up these tariffs, it'll start to do some real damage.
And yes, what is the impact on American companies, American consumers?
Well, it depends on what industry you're in, and it depends on what you purchase. So we're seeing Chinese tariffs on things like chemicals, on things like diesel fuel. And so those particular industries will be hit hard by these Chinese tariffs. Obviously, China has raised tariffs on U.S. soybeans, and so that's going to hurt agricultural exporters. But for most Americans, they won't see it. There will be some higher tariffs on some goods that Americans purchase, things like motorcycles and so forth. But generally, the effects are limited, and it's going to be tied to particular types of consumers, particular types of industries.
Well, Gus, the corporate giants are a little better poised to withstand these kinds of turbulent waves. But small businesses are really getting hit by a double whammy these days. The small businesses and startups, not only are they being affected by the tariffs that are making their costs higher and making their goods cost more, they're also being hit by the labor shortage, having trouble finding workers.
That's right. I mean, obviously, there are certain small businesses in some industries that import components from China that are being subjected to higher tariffs, and that's really hurting them. So we saw a television manufacturer in the South. They said that they're going to lay off more than 100 workers because of the tariffs and because of higher costs for imported goods from China. So it's very industry-specific. I think the big companies with the bigger supply chains are less vulnerable than smaller companies that are being hit hard by these tariffs because they use some of these Chinese-made goods in their products.
We've seen China's economy actually beginning to slow. It's not doing as well as it had been, although their numbers are always a little suspect because you can't necessarily believe all the figures that they put out. But is this affecting China these days?
It is, but on the same token, we've also seen the yuan depreciate somewhat against the dollar, so that helps offset some of the impact of the higher tariffs. I think that if we see more tariffs, then it will start to bite more on the Chinese economy. I think generally the Chinese economy is prepared to weather this, and so there are limits to how much damage the U.S. tariffs can do.
If the U.S. is basically doing so well, the economy is doing well, why are we seeing a stall on wages?
I think it depends on what wage measure you're looking at. So there's something called the Employment Cost Index that follows workers over time, and that's showing a little bit stronger wage growth. Part of the reason why average hourly earnings, the average wage, hasn't grown as quickly is because there's been a huge influx of young people into the job market. So those are workers with lower skills, less experience, so they're paid less. And so that's weighing on wage growth across the economy, even though individual workers may be seeing stronger wages. I think as the job market continues to tighten, as the unemployment rate moves towards 3.5% in early 2019, we will see stronger wage growth and that workers will be getting more benefit from this tight job market out there.
Gus, thanks so much. Gus Fauché is chief economist for PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Coming up, could Tesla be going private? We'll talk about it.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Shares of Tesla soared yesterday. Today, they're down about 1.5% after CEO Elon Musk tweeted that he's considering taking the company private. We're talking about it with David Welch, automotive reporter for Bloomberg in Detroit. David, welcome back to the program. This seems like a very daunting challenge for Elon Musk. He says he's got the financing, but we're talking about $70 billion. Does he have it, do you think?
Well, maybe not, but he might not have to have the entire $70 billion. And here's what I mean. Some of the shareholders could actually just go with him and exchange their public shares for private ones and be a shareholder in the private company. So he may not have to buy that many people out. There are estimates that maybe he'd only have to raise about $20 billion in that sort of case. So if he did, then it's a lot easier thing to pull off than having to raise $82 billion.
Keep going.
Yeah, no problem. It's still a lot of money to raise for a company that has $10 billion in debt and is burning cash.
The advantages for him, would be that he wouldn't be under the pressure from shareholders, but he'd still be under pressure, wouldn't he, from those investors who are financing this?
Right, and it would still be easier for him in the sense that the shareholders who would stick with him would be like the major shareholders in Tesla now, T. Rowe Price, Fidelity, Vanguard. They hold the shares on behalf of their retail clients. And so you don't have one big group pressuring him. The other thing you would get rid of is you get rid of the short sellers who are constantly trying to make the shares go down, by either writing columns that the company is in bad shape or just making bets that the shares will go down. And you don't have as many people who are in and out of the stock because it's not as liquid. It's a private stock, so you can't just go out and trade it. So you tend to attract the people who believe in Elon, believe in his vision, and are in it for the long game. And that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to get to a place where instead of having to hit quarterly earnings numbers and maybe make short-term decisions, they can just keep investing and building for a future where they have multiple electric cars out on the road.
Interesting. One of the writers at the Wall Street Journal referred to it as a bizarre plan in that the suggestion is that a buyout is needed to get out of the public markets that force the company into short-term thinking. When this writer said that, in fact, Tesla has benefited hugely from public markets.
Well, it has because they've never made money. They've always been burning cash. And designing all new cars and electric batteries and building factories costs billions and billions of dollars. So they burn, on average, about $1 billion a quarter. Since they aren't making it, investors keep ponying up. They've had multiple bond issues, they've had multiple share offerings, and they've all been very nicely subscribed. So they're getting cash in because the public markets believe in this and love it. What Elon doesn't like is the criticism, the short sellers, people asking him questions about why he's doing this or that. I interviewed him once many years ago, and I said, listen, people say you're a micromanager. And he said, that's not true. I'm a nanomanager. He's even worse than that. The man likes control, and he doesn't like being questioned. He's always had a board that was, most of his board are people who've been investing in his businesses for a very long time, or he's known for a long time. His brother is on the board. This isn't a board that really asks him tough questions and pushes him hard on corporate governance and the other things that a typical CEO faces.
David,
and he wants to take that to the next level.
David, there's been a suggestion that he could be in trouble with the SEC if it turns out that he doesn't have the financing, since the stock price soared yesterday, and that he could be considered accused of manipulating the stock.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I don't know the ins and outs of the securities law there. I would be surprised if, at a minimum, somebody wasn't at least looking at this. There are a lot of things that Tesla has done or that Elon has done that have kind of raised eyebrows out in the investment community in reference to SEC rules. He bought SolarCity, which was a company he owned 20% of and his two cousins owned a stake in and ran. They talked about the deal. The board told them, sit on it. 2 months later, they raised $2.5 billion for Tesla. 2 weeks after that, they bought SolarCity. So everybody who bought that $2.5 billion in new stock had no idea they were going to be buying into a solar company 2 weeks later. That was never looked at. There are a lot of things here about his communication that just have raised yellow flags, but so far there have been no investigations that we know of, and it's kind of been steady as she goes.
David, thanks so much for joining us for a few minutes. David Welch is automotive reporter at Bloomberg in Detroit, and still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, avoiding costly banking fees.
WBBM News Time 12:26 as we check the markets with Elisa Parenti.
Regine, the Dow is down 39 points, NASDAQ up 8, S&P up a fraction. Crude oil futures investors are grumpy. They're sinking about 4% now to $66.50 a barrel. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have USDA supply and demand report Friday. We have the China trade war, and we have drier Midwest. That's been pushing grains around all over. Soybeans are up 6 at 9.11¾. The wheat is down 2.5, and corn for December at 3.86, up 1.5. Back and forth trade waiting for Friday. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Regine Schlesinger.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are mixed as trade concerns with China weigh on the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday, an estimated Americans spend up to $18,000 in banking fees over their lifetime, will help you cut that down.
There is more action in the meal kit wars.
And village board members in Orland Park say yes to video gambling despite opposition from many residents.
On the markets, the Dow down 39 points now. The NASDAQ is up 4. S&P 500 is flat.
And we're expecting partly cloudy, partly sunny skies this afternoon, a high temperature of 84. It's 78 now at O'Hare, 76 along Chicago's lakefront.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour is presented today by the Village of Bedford Park.
There have been predictions that meal kit services would put a big dent in the supermarket business. That has not happened. Let's get an update from Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com in Los Angeles. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Phil. This was a very big wave of acceptance when it started.
Absolutely. But keep in mind something. What we want is we want convenience. We want good food. The problem with meal kits is what we got is we got lots of overpackaging that especially millennials and Generation Z are really, you know, horrified about. We had to order them 3 days ahead in order to get them. We had to order three meals a day. And similar to what happened with Groupon is all these meal kits were giving us, you know, free meals to get us hooked. So what the average consumer did is they went from meal kit company to meal kit company to meal kit company to be able to get free meal kits, and they never had to buy them. And by the time, you know, that they should have been hooked on it, they said, ah, too much packaging and not enough assortment. So what you're seeing is, and last week Blue Apron's earnings came out, and it was even worse than expected. Now supermarkets are picking up the slack, and they're making their own meal kits right in the store. So you can buy it on impulse. They change the assortment every day, and it's a lot cheaper, and there's no overpackaging.
Does that have legs yet? Are people going to the grocery stores and buying the meal kits?
It's too early to tell, Chris, to be honest with you. What we're seeing is just about every retailer from Walmart down to Mariano's experimenting with meal kits. We don't know if it's going to stick. What we do know is people do want convenience. So they want to get that chicken breast that's already marinated for them. They want to get, you know, carrots that are individually packaged. So convenience is a driver. But whether or not meal kit sticks, it's probably too early to tell.
Well, we'll be watching along with you. Thanks so much, Phil. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com in Los Angeles. And let's take a look at how the markets are faring today. We have a mixed market. Let's talk about it with Art Hogan, chief market strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. And Art, welcome to the program. We had a big spurt yesterday for the markets, and it's really been kind of an up week in the past couple of weeks. Tell us why you think today it's down a little bit.
Well, it's interesting. We're running out of positive catalysts, and by that I mean, Chris, we've, you know, sort of getting to the end of earnings season. During earnings season, we've been able, arguably, to put trade tensions behind us. We hadn't had many upsets about trade necessarily. As a matter of fact, the news was more good than bad. We're at the negotiating table with Mexico. We didn't escalate with Europe, and Canada's on the schedule to be negotiating, you know, sometime in August. But unfortunately, as you run out of earnings and you head back into that vacuum of news, and China retaliates, you know, over our latest $16 billion worth of Chinese goods that we're putting tariffs on, that comes to the forefront again. So you don't focus on the good fundamentals, you focus on the potential headwinds that trade can cause, and I think that's what's holding us back today. But I would argue that over the last several weeks, we've really been focused on strong fundamentals and putting trade on the back burner. I think when earnings season's over, and as we're winding down this week, I think we'll start shifting back over to that and some of the midterm election noise. And so unfortunately, that probably becomes a bit more of a headwind as we head into the balance of August here.
And Art, there is a story today that YouTube is about to pass Facebook as the second biggest website in the United States. More problems for Facebook. What do you see as you look at the FANG stocks?
Yeah, it's interesting. So Facebook's got a whole host of issues. The core business is certainly slowing down in terms of growth. But, you know, I think that has a lot to do with saturation, right? So in terms of, you know, active users, Facebook is in decline. YouTube's picking up, and you know, there's more choices in social media on top of the other things that are facing Facebook in terms of, you know, whether or not they had an effect on the election and, you know, what they're doing in terms of, keeping personal data private, et cetera. So I think that Facebook is probably going to be a grind for a while here while other social media sites are picking up a whole lot of traction.
Is it possible baby boomers are a big audience in the Facebook crowd, and that the younger generations have got all kinds of things that they're working on that's not Facebook?
That's entirely true in my house, so I can tell you that's the case.
Mine.
And I've got two college students that haven't logged into Facebook in months, if not years, and they look at their Instagrams on a second-by-second basis. So, yeah, I think there's, you know, other choices, and you know, probably a younger generation has moved to, you know, those other choices and find that more exciting. So that's the problem with disruptive technologies. So another disruptive technology is going to come along and disrupt you. So I think that that's one of the reasons that Facebook made investments to have other platforms. And hopefully they can learn how to watch those grow and monetize from them as well.
Have you been taking a look at to see what's going on at Tesla this week? What's your opinion?
hard not to look at it since it's the only story we talked about yesterday. It seems like, you know, something that we've never seen in our lifetimes, at least in the, you know, the way to disseminate news about a possible LBO. And there's strong arguments on both sides of that. Obviously, you've got a cowboy for a CEO, and he doesn't seem to give a whole lot of concern to how he disseminates news. It'd be interesting to see if he actually does have somebody that's willing to let him, you know, upwards of $60 billion to take this thing private. I just don't think Tesla's at the point in its growth cycle that it should be private. It needs access to capital markets. It's had great access to capital markets, and we continue to, but if it's going to continue to grow, it's harder to do that in private markets. But we'll see. It's a story that's going to be dominating the news for a while until it doesn't.
Art, thanks so much. Art Hogan is Chief Market Strategist for B. Riley FBR in New York. Still to come, Personal Finance Wednesday, steering clear of costly banking fees.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Personal Finance Wednesday, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. This afternoon, we're putting the focus on banking and investing fees and ways to keep as much of your money as possible. We're talking with Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com in Washington. Mark, there is one study that shows that the average American racks up over a lifetime almost $18,000 in fees charged for things like overdrafts and other ATM fees and things like that. Does that surprise you, that number? Is that shocking?
Well, I suppose it is, and my first advice would be don't be that average American. Who wants that on their gravestone, right? I was an average American who paid too much in banking fees. But the good news is that for most of us, these fees are perfectly avoidable. And I put at the top of the list ATM fees and overdraft fees. And I would just ask members of your audience to stop and ask themselves, do they have an idea how much they might have shelled out in any of these fees in the past year? And what I would say is, you probably should be paying nothing for these kinds of fees in the course of a year. One of the most popular things we do at Bankrate is an annual banking fee study. We monitor ATM fees and overdraft fees. Average cost of an out-of-network ATM fee was $4.69 last year, and this has risen 55% over 10 years. But you can find a bank that charges nothing for ATM fees. So why are you paying that? You need to shop around. Also unavoidable, overdraft fees. You know, every now and then we might make a mistake, but if you have, let's say, a savings account from which if you pull too much money out of your checking account, it comes out of the savings account, you should not be paying anything for an overdraft fee. And it's very dangerous also to have a line of credit where essentially you have a credit card where a would-be overdraft is then paid by the credit line, and then you end up not only paying high rates of interest, but also sort of continuing to exacerbate the problem. So avoid these fees.
Let's move over then from the bank account to the 401k account. How do you save money there?
The 401k is a lot tougher. I would prefer to probably focus on individual retirement accounts simply because 401k accounts are typically managed and totally dictated by our employer. That's the biggest benefit of a 401k account is it's a retirement account typically where you have the employer giving you a match. Let's say you put 3% in, they put 3% in, or whatever the numbers are. The way that you want to try to minimize any fee exposure there is to look for, if you can, the least expensive mutual funds or investments that they provide. And typically the loads and the fees, the expense ratios, that's the typical measure of this sort of cost of managing these funds. You just want to look for the least expensive one. And then for your individual retirement accounts, which is a retirement account that you would fund yourself, you want to look for simply the lowest cost. And here again, it really does pay to shop around and ask, for example, do you have no-load mutual funds? How much are your commissions? Do I have to pay any commission for moving in or out of a mutual fund or ETF? And I guarantee if you just spend a little bit of time on this, you can really minimize the fees, and therefore you will not be that average person.
Great, Mark. Some great advice on how to reduce those fees. Mark Hamrick is Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com in Washington. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. Still to come, CVS looks to strengthen its position in providing health care.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
CVS is working to expand its telehealth business, offering services to people dealing with minor illnesses. Let's get details from Bruce Japson, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Bruce, what is this program? Explain it to us.
Yeah, well, Chris and Regine, it's all about all things mobile anymore these days, no matter what we're doing. And CVS is going to expand nationwide with full effort, where you can have access to a physician via your iPhone, basically, digitally. And Walgreens did this a couple of years ago with a company called MD Live. And this is for sort of minor ailments. Let's just say you have a rash, or your kid is looking a little peaked or whatever. You could, you know, right on your app, your CVS MinuteClinic app, you could order up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, access to a video consultation with a healthcare provider, a physician, you know, perhaps a nurse practitioner or whatever. And this whole idea is not new. Telemedicine and telehealth have been around forever, but health insurance companies are now paying for it. So now it's really taking off. They figure a $59 consultation with, you don't have health insurance, is cheaper than going to a physician's office or an urgent care or a copay at an emergency room. So it's really starting to take off.
Since it's been around for a while, have there been studies done to see whether, you know, how effective, and whether it's having any negative effect maybe on people's health?
Well, that's a great question. Of course, CVS didn't disclose any of the negatives, but we do know that the reason they're expanding it is because people like it. People are busy. They want to, you know, go after this. They want to use it. They're using it, so they like it. Now, the negative side is, you know, physicians will say, listen, there's only so much that you can handle via an iPhone. I mean, you can send a physician a picture of some kind of a wound you have, or a mosquito bite or something that you're just not sure of. You could email that to your doctor in other ways and see if they can evaluate it. But there are certainly downsides to doing it, and it's for minor conditions. People need to understand that. But it is, if you think about it, you don't have time to go to the doctor, or you just want some sort of a peace of mind thing. It could save some money for people in the long run, if it all works out and people like it, and that's why they're expanding it.
All right. Well, we'll be watching it. Thanks so much for joining us, Bruce Japson, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. You can hear Bruce's reports on health Monday evenings and Saturday mornings right here on News Radio WBBM. And you will find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time 12:55. We wrap up the noon business hour with a check of the markets from Elisa Parenti at Bloomberg.
Regine, we've got the Dow down just 38 points now, and the NASDAQ higher by 0.7%. S&P now fractionally higher. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg still down by about 0.2%. Boeing, Caterpillar, and oil companies are especially sensitive to the U.S.-China trade spat, and they are the main reason the Dow is lower. China is striking back dollar for dollar against U.S. tariffs announced yesterday on $16 billion in Chinese goods, including motorcycles and rail cars. China's latest tariffs on U.S. goods cover coal and cars. Oil futures are tanking, down almost 4%, near $66.50. Walmart is devoting less shelf space to Hostess cupcakes and Twinkies. That's part of why Hostess revenue in recent months missed even the lowest estimates. The ticker for Hostess is Twink, and it's sinking more than 16% today. With business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.